Okay, we're starting our inside part of the interview where we're looking at some of the paperwork and pictures that are part of Mr. Thiessen's collection. So where are we starting?
Well, we'll start with the permit books. I guess they have changed considerably over the years, but every farmer, any producer had to have a permit to sell his grain to the wheat board. And every year, of course, you had to, based on his seeded acreage, and there was different criteria he had to meet to qualify for a permit book. And this was usually done, started about June, and ended any time thereafter. But the wheat board would come out with a guideline that for us guys to follow to make out the permit book, and wasn't all that hard to do. But the farmer had to keep a lot of records too. You know, he had to know how many acres of wheat he seeded, and oats or whatever. And those days, his summer fellow acres qualified for permit book acres as well. And he could divide that up to whatever he wanted. Then he wanted to sell oats. He might have grown oats, but maybe he fed them all, so he could allocate all his acres to wheat or rye or whatever he cared to do. And that's what he. So every time the quota would open up for wheat, then he, based on what he had, the acres he had assigned, that's what he would. That's what he would be able to deliver. So when it had how much farmland he owned and how much he had rented, and that was all kept track of. And we had to, every time he made a delivery, we had to record it in the book, in the permit book. And of course, he wasn't allowed to haul more than what he was allotted. And of course, if we guys took more grain from him and he was allotted, we'd be in trouble from the board. This was the wheat board, not the grain commission. And we had to enter the amount, the date, the company, because they could take this book to whatever grain company they wished to hold it. Didn't matter where they filled it out. And we had to put the gross bushels. Well, nobody ever really did that. The net bushels, and we had to initial it that we had made the entry. And there was pages in here for wheat. There was pages in here for barley, rye, oats, durum wheat, and flax. So it was, it's quite a little book here we have, but if you wanted to take a picture of that's the book that's the record that went with the book to start with, that we had to fill that out before the wheat board would approve it. Mm-hmm. And then
I'm just going to put the front for a little context.
Okay.
Now, when the person came in with the permit book for the first time in the year, I noticed that when we're looking at here's 1953-54.
Yeah, yeah.
Were they committed to bringing all of their product to you?
No.
Or their wheat to you?
No, they could go wherever they want.
Okay. And was there much moving around? Or
oh, yeah,
sort of
lots of it. Okay. Yes. Oh, yeah, there was lots of that done, which is okay. That's good. That's good competition. Yeah, there was a lot of that done. And every year, they had to have a different permit, different book. Their number wouldn't be the same. Were you able to get it?
No, it says change the back.
Yeah, but did the picture turn out?
No, it won't let me click.
Oh, no.
I have to turn it back on again.
I mentioned in this thing that
okay, well, shall we
here
continue?
We go. Yes.
Yeah, that was, this was the board's way of keeping track of what each producer delivered. And, of course, in a lot of years, there was a final payment paid out over and above what they had received at the elevator. And that was based on the grain that was recorded in this permit book. And that's one way the inspector would come around, like the wheat board inspector. He would come around and check on these books about, oh, I don't know, every 2 or 3 months. And that's what he'd look at. He'd look at the delivery, see if there's anybody over-delivered or whatever, you know. He'd check on the entities in the book. So,
I'm going to ask you a question. May not be one that you want to answer, and you're free not,
anyway.
Not to answer. Like my experience has been that normally inspectors get their jobs because something has gone wrong in the past, and they feel there's something that needs to be inspected. You know, they won't necessarily have an inspector job when they started these permit books, but at some point along the line, and I'm not, you know, at some point along the line, something's gone wrong, and they've said, well, we need to inspect these. So why do inspectors exist? What could people have been doing that sort of fudged with the books?
Well, there could have been, like it says in here that you deliver grain, only deliver grain what was produced on this acreage. So if one guy hauls on another guy's permit book that he didn't grow, that was one thing they'd be checking for. That's why what one job an inspector would be. And the inspector's job really wasn't just to inspect books. And like that's changed over the years dramatically. Like when I first started, the guy would come in and he'd... They would, like when they would take the books. They'd take the books right out of you. They knew where we kept them, so they would just go and take them and look through them, and you know, randomly. later on, that was not really so much of a concern to them. I guess there was other ways of keeping track of, you know, computers and all this that they have. But anyway, what they would also do is they would make out reports every time they come as to how much grain in the fall, like this time of year. They, after harvest, they'd come and they would make out a report. We'd have to tell them how much grain was grown. And we'd take that from what the farmer told us. And it's amazing how close we could come when the end of the year came. But anyway, they would keep track of that, and they would, you know, so as that the board would have an idea as to how much grain is still left out there to be marketed. And that would, and then they would go in turn make sales, you know, to other countries, or figure out what they had to do to get rid of the farmer's grain for them. And that was a big part of their job. And in later years, my brother also worked for the wheat board. And like his job, they spent a lot more time with the producer, talking to them directly, having meetings and whatever. More so than these permit books.
Mm-hmm.
But they still have the permit books to at least I think they still have. I did when I left.
So with your brother working for the wheat board, did you have interesting discussions over the family
we have,
table?
We've had many interesting discussions, and we didn't always agree. But he also worked for the grain company for 21 years, so he knew what...
For Patterson's as well?
For Patterson, mm-hmm. Yeah. So he knew what the companies had to deal with as well as the farmers. So,
yeah.
I mean, it worked. It was interesting.
Just curious, how did he come to the other?
The wheat board... they try to recruit their country staff, at least, from the grain industry. So they would put out when they needed some, you know, there was a change needed, somebody retired or something, word would get around, and they wouldn't just out and go and ask you. I mean, nobody in the grain industry just goes and talks to the neighbor to steal his help. That's just not how they worked. So, but word got out, and... that, you know, they were taking applications and you could apply for it. So anyway, he did.
Mm-hmm.
And he got it. So
was it a happy move for him, you think?
I think so. It was a change. He needed to change. One thing was hours of work. You know, elevator hours are very demanding. And you got to be... I don't know, you got to, I always say a special person to run an elevator because, you know, else as well. And if you enjoy it, it's good. And I've enjoyed it. And He did too, but there was he seen an opportunity to advance in the industry, and he did quite well with the wheat board too. So it's not that he didn't like the company he was working for, or that aspect of the industry. He just wanted to change, and he did. So
moving along.
Just on these permit books, I'll just add this in. It's quite interesting that just a sample of books that I'm looking at. This farmer had rented land from people in the States.
Yes.
Iowa, Missouri. There's about three different American people, and the other are also the estates of farmers, I guess, and the widow would.
Yes.
And they go through Canada Trust to have be their Canadian agent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... There's a lot of American people that own land. And you're working in the industry, you have contact with so many different, walks of life, like lawyers, estates, and all this kind of stuff. You're dealing with it. And you just kind of got to know a little bit about everything.
Now, do you think that the people, the Americans that owned these farms, were they people that perhaps came up and tried farming and left, or they just speculated and bought farmland? Or what do you think?
There's a lot of different things. There'd be speculation. People come over here and bought land and just for speculation, and they would rent it out. We've had cases, I know in my experience, where the farmer would, they come and farm for a while, and then they would go back to the U.S. And we had people farming right along the border, would farm on both sides, and they would, of course, they had to sell their grain in Canada, and then theirs, and this is, there was at some years where they, depending on the sales, where grain would come across one way or the other, and you pay a charge at the board, or the levy or whatever, for taxes and stuff. That was another thing for taxes. we were also tax collectors from the U.S. people. We had to, when they sold grain, we had to hold back a certain percentage to cover their taxes. So, and then we had to send that to the government. So there's a lot of different little things, but mm-hmm. It was one book here that kind of might be interesting. There's something a little bit different here.
Would you like to pass me the ones we've dealt with, and then we can sort of
through them.
Yeah, I think, but I'd much
prefer.
But
he had one that he wanted.
Yeah, there's one here that I wanted to show you in particular. But
is it this one?
No. Maybe it's this one, is it? Here it is. There's a...
So it's a fancy one.
Yeah. It was quite something different they did. But, so they try to kind of, not just do this same old thing every year. They would kind of go to something a little different.
It's also a notice that the producer had died and that the estate would...
Yep. The executors.
A little yellow
sticker to insert. Yeah. And then they had, of course, the cash advances. And that's, I don't know if there's any, did you run into any of those?
No.
Okay, well, there was probably, let's go to the years that I remember. But anyway, the wheat board would advance in that they would... For their grain that they couldn't haul, it was stored in their bin, and then they would give them a certain percentage of what the value was, and then when they hauled it in, they'd have to pay back a certain percentage of every load that they hauled, and that was all had to be recorded in here too. I guess this. I'm trying to find one here that actually had a recording of a. Here it is. Here's one. But anyway, there's a sticker that, here's the recordings of all the different grain that all the different deductions that were taken over the year. And when it was all paid back, he'd get this sticker that was stuck so that we would know that there was no more, we didn't have to deduct anymore. And there's a little, and in the front of the page there, I've got somebody, whoever did it, Mark canceled, and it's done. Mm-hmm. And just one way of keeping track. And that's something that the inspectors, they were quite involved.
Given the amount of paperwork that this entails, that it must have been quite a feat to keep it all straight.
Yeah, it was, but if you followed, you know, if you make, if you established a system for yourself, that it really wasn't all that bad, because when the guy hauled the grain in, he'd present you with the book, or we'd have it, whichever. They didn't all take it with them. And so we, the first thing we would do is we would check to make sure. We already knew it before he came in because he phoned. So we would check it and, you know, yes, he's got quota. And then we would take the tickets. He would maybe haul four loads, for instance, and there'd be four different storage tickets that we would make out. Some people just wrote cash tickets. I didn't like that approach. I liked to make storage tickets and then convert that into one cash ticket. It's a lot. And I think our office appreciated that too.
Less paperwork.
Less paperwork. So anyway, then you would ticket books. They would where we were writing and tear them out and put them with the book. And then when we had time, maybe he wanted to, maybe he'd want his money right away, quick. Mm-hmm. Then we would just have to take the time and write the ticket and do the recording. Which the recording wasn't really all that bad, unless there was some problems with it, and there was sometimes, but we would just record it and put the book back in the file, and that was really it wasn't too bad. I mean, the real paperwork was after the fact of dealing with the farmer, like there was reports we had to do, and like lots of other things that didn't, and you know, beyond the cash ticket, beyond dumping the grain, recording the writing the ticket and doing the recording. But if you ever forgot, you're in trouble. You could be in, you know, I mean, with you for yourself and for the farmer as well. Or, for instance, you know, you just book here where this, just the one we had where the entries were. Well, then it's here. That was very important that we do this, because especially if they traveled from one to the other. Mm-hmm. And I remember in one instance, the guy presented the book and. So anyway, he said, well, he was paid up. Well, there's still money in there. So anyway, I had to deduct it. I had no choice because I had to deduct that. And so anyway, he was quite upset about it. I said, well, we'll check this out. But in the meantime, if you want your ticket now, I gotta deduct that, whatever the amount was. So anyhow, that was fine. And so when he was gone, I checked into it myself, because so anyhow, what we found is what the elevator company that had bought this grain time before had made a deduction, but had not recorded anything in his book. Mm. So he was overpaid. So it's no problem. When you find out, you write him another check, and then that's it. But the entry in here, and so he's hauled his quota, and we look in the books where his entries are, and yeah, he's got quota. You take his load of grain and then find out that he's overdrawn because the other guy has mm-hmm. forgot. And I've done it myself. I forgot, so the other guy would be in trouble. So mm-hmm. those are the kind of things that you kind of had to.
So when you say you write a ticket, is that like a check?
There's two different kinds of tickets. There's a storage ticket and a cash ticket. Storage ticket, this just tells the company and the farmer that, yes, the farmer has hauled this grain. And you put the grade on it, and the dockage, and that kind of stuff. Anything that pertains to the grade, moisture, whatever. And then at a later date, because the guy might not want to sell it that day. He might want to hold it for, you know, there was a time when they could haul it in and keep it on storage for 90 days or something. Because they didn't know how their tax was going to work or mm-hmm. what, for whatever, each ticket for whatever time. And then when he came back, yeah, I'm going to sell it. Then you take those tickets and convert it into cash. And sometimes they had to pay storage for it. and this kind of stuff. And there's some in these books that will lead to that. No. That's let's see.
Before you move on to that, so when cash ticket, then is that actually a check?
That's cash. That's a check.
Just a check.
Yeah.
Okay. So take it to the bank.
Yes.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
So we're moving on to the.
I don't know what's.
Well, I'm just not sure what this is. I will have to take a look at this.
Looks very old.
Yeah. Cemetery. Okay. So this is what I was talking about, on the scale, when the inspector came to inspect it, he would. This is a certificate that he would leave us.
Oh.
And then with his stamp on it, and it would tell us there whether it was rejected or whether the scale was passed or. And if it rejected, then they put a seal on it, so you couldn't use it. that was bad. Because
and when would they do that?
Oh, anytime.
What would cause them to do that?
Oh, if the scale was, it was a variance in what, like they had their weights with them and everything, they could check to see if the scale was on. And if the variance was too big, then they would seal it.
Yeah, so there was some tolerance allowed.
Oh, there was some tolerance.
Where you'd have to fix it.
Yeah. Oh, yes, fix it. But yeah. And then we'd have to make out a report and send it into them, and they'd come back and inspect it again. And so it's pretty well regulated. There wasn't too much problem with it. And that's what they would.
And this one in 1938 cost $2.
To have it
inspected. Yeah. And they rejected a wagon.
A wagon, plate? That would be the wagon.
Platter.
Plat.
Plate or?
Plate. Plat. Wagon. It's on a gurney scale. And I'm not sure what that would be. The wagon, but that would be the wagon scale. That's the front one where you drive one with the wagon.
Hopper something.
Yeah, that would be the hopper in the back. That's what you load your cars with.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would. And yeah, they put on there what.
So did they still call it the wagon scale, even though by this time they were pulling trucks?
No, we called it platform scale.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we called it when I left. Yeah. So that was.
So in a case where you had, let's say that your scales were really out of whack.
Yeah.
Was there ever, like, did you ever have to worry about farmers coming back to you and saying, gee, I hear your scales were out of whack and maybe you owe me more money, or?
Had to worry about that too much. But, you know, it's not quite often the farmers would be sitting right there when the guy come in to check. And of course, they'd always make fun of you.
Yes, we were talking about
the platform scale and the. But today, like the platform, the hopper scales, and you can weigh them. You know, it's all done automatically. But the scales on top, as the grain comes through, going into a car, for instance, or wherever, it goes through a scale, and that automatically weighs it. Don't have to worry about standing there pushing the slide back and forth.
Talking about scales, one of our interviews was with Mr. Kasner from the Grain Commission, who was the chief of weights and measures.
Okay.
And he oversaw the change to metric.
Yeah.
So I'm sure your career also
dealt
with the change to metric. Yeah. So from your perspective, how did that, can you recall the chaos?
Yeah. Oh, well, I wouldn't call it chaos. I mean, not with us anyhow. I'm sure that there was, but it was a change of where we really had to, stop and think. But we had charts that we would, conversion charts, and that was quite as we could, for a while we would, because we had to convert to the farmer. He wouldn't change. There's no way. Because some of us didn't either. But anyhow, for those that didn't, it made it pretty tough, because there was a lot of changes, and you had to watch for error, and that's the thing where you could make errors in from converting from one to the other. In the chemical field, like where you sold chemical fertilizer, that was really had to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some that did not want to change, and same with computers when they came in. We were not going to change. Well, didn't last long either. I mean, the industry didn't get rid of them. That's not what I'm saying. they just didn't progress in the, you know, they set their own little limits. It wasn't all that bad, I didn't think.
Well, actually, Mr. Kastner was telling us that there's something like, and I probably have the number wrong, but he said from the farmers to the customer overseas, there was something like 12 different
exchanges,
conversions
you had to make. Yes,
and
absolutely.
Once you had metric, it was the one measure all the way through.
Well,
I believe it was one. It might have been a bit.
As I understand it, there was a lot of conversions made, but when, in order for the wheat board, now maybe somebody will correct me on this, but from the time the wheat board made the sales to countries, it was back into bushels, poundage.
Could, I guess, depend on the customer.
So, I mean, it was, even then, it was still, because we all made fun of it, you know, we had to go metric, but they sold on imperial. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's,
to Britain, that would be.
I would guess, whoever they find the system, I think the metric system was good for the industry, really. I felt that way, because it really wasn't that bad. To me, I mean, I could be, you know, I'm not speaking for everybody, but to me it wasn't really all that big a deal.
I'm very excited by this book. Very excited. There's probably a picture of all the major grain elevators in this country. This Hagel's Construction Company, Engineers Contractors, and they're all pictures, and when they built them and how long it took them to build.
I've seen that for the first time today.
Oh, and you were talking, I was going through it and getting, yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's nice. That's a good thing to have.
General offices, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and
Fort William,
Ontario.
Yeah. That's a long time ago. Now, there's one picture missing out of there.
Yes, I noticed.
And I don't know where it was, because I don't know where it went to. That was the Patterson one.
Yes.
So somebody has taken it out of there.
All the other ones are there.
Yeah.
There's two in Fort William, Transcona.
Yeah, that's a...
There's one where they talk about how long it took them to pour the concrete and how many months it took and they were up and the roof was on.
Yeah, it's an interesting, very interesting.
So where did this one come from, this book?
This book, that's what Blake, I tell you, the guy turned it over to me to look after it. Yeah, he's passed on now, so he ended up with that thing. There was a, I don't know whether his son has any of it or not, I don't know. But that's what ended up with. See, the trouble is with these companies today, and that batter's no exception, they don't look after history as far as I'm concerned. The history stopped kind of when this fella died, this Blake, when he passed away. Even after he left, after he retired, he did a lot of work for them. But the Patterson used to have their own little newsletter, like you were talking about, the UGG.
Mm-hmm.
And when he could no longer do it, it just stopped. That's sad, because there's a lot of history there that people could. Yep.
Now, this would be a great one for us to scan in to our system.
Yep.
And we should note this one, be on one of my, I'll just note it, because...
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to take it now because we haven't purchased our scanner yet. I'm hoping within the next month or so we'll have it.
Sure.
So then it would be a sort of a quick in and out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be a good thing to have.
That is very, that's a whole story there.
Yeah.
That construction company that specialized in elevators.
Yeah. I wonder if that company still exists in Minnesota. Certainly doesn't in Thunder Bay.
Maybe a guy could go on Google, maybe they
that's
still
right.
Are.
Right. Oh, okay, what else?
There's more history books. There's
Did you get a picture of the front of this?
No, I didn't. I was just too excited. I was looking at it. Good. Maybe I'll take a picture of this while I have the camera on. You got your model hands up. Good.
I wonder if that's an F or an H.
Which one?
Is it Hagel's or Fagel's construction company?
Oh.
Yeah, a good question. Hagel's, I would think it'd be Hagel's, but I don't know.
Well, it's exactly the same as Fort William.
Yeah, okay, so it's a Fagel's. And actually, you know, I think I have heard of them. Some one of our I interviewed a couple of the engineers for CD Hall and
yep.
Fagel's. Okay.
Can't remember the other company that did
yep.
a lot of construction, but I think they mentioned Fagel's.
This book here is, of course, it's grain codes. Like everything was done in code because. Well, to write it all in would be taken too much, like just anything. It's the grain, it's the code that used by the entire grain system. And there's hundreds of them in here. And I couldn't begin, like CWB or, and like, you know, instead of Canadian Wheat Board, they just CWB and all this kind of stuff. And this is one book that they used.
The DRP. What does DRP stand for?
No.
Maybe it'll tell you in there.
Dawson Richardson Publications Limited.
Okay. Like, I never used that book myself. We had different ones, and unfortunately, I don't have one at the moment, but...
Printed at the Grain Trade Press in Winnipeg.
Yep.
For $2.50.
What year?
This is the 1948 edition, and the first edition was in 1928. Oh, and first and second editions were published for the country elevator section of the grain trade only. The general edition was completely revised in 1939 to serve all sections of the Canadian grain trade.
Yeah. Like we had a copy of it, and there was some newer versions too, which I haven't got, but maybe someday I will.
Yes, wonderful.
And then there is...
This one's another very old book.
Yeah, this is the Reddy Reckner. Now, that's pretty hard to...
Reddy Reckner, I can read it.
So they...
What's that?
That was... Now, this one here, we had a little bit different one. Like it's a way of... you don't have to really figure out, like when we were, years ago when we converted from, like what he was talking about from going getting before metric, you had to convert pounds to bushels, and then every grain had a different pound per bushel, and all that stuff. It was very confusing. That's why I said I like metric.
Mm-hmm.
But in this book here, there's different ways like we used to figure interest. Or storage from, if we left it more than 15 days or whatever it was, he had to pay storage. And that was all, we had a special chart that we, over a little book, something like that, only a lot smaller than that, that we had to, so if the guy had X number of bushels and he had so many days, the less was this many dollars because.
It's too small for me to get, but it's fascinating. At 41 cents, at 42 cents.
It's quite interesting. So that would be in an antique, I'll tell you that. And this is the grain value tables content. Oh yeah, this is the one we used.
That one might be a little harder to get.
That's pretty hard. This is an old book. There was better ones.
Okay, well then we'll note that the brown book that we can't read what the title is the Grain Traders.
Yeah. Grain Traders Somerset, Manitoba, where this one came from. What else has he got wrote in there?
I'm just looking at the Reddy Reckoner, and copyright 1905, but initial copyright it looks like in 1881.
Yeah. But if a guy wanted to figure, you know, if he didn't want to, I'd have to study that before I could even use it again. I don't think I've one used quite like it. But we would, there again, instead of, before calculators, we didn't have calculators and those mm-hmm. kind of things. And if you could go and take this book and there's X number of bushels and of wheat or whatever, then you could just quickly look in there and it'll tell you how many dollars and all this kind of stuff, which was which was handy for, but now since calculators and stuff come in, you don't need all that stuff. You know, it just...
Calculators and computers.
Calculators and computers.
Yeah.
But I still like to add figures without a computer.
Sometimes you press the wrong key.
Exactly. Now those are just books. This is just a kind of a notebook that Patterson put out for
for the try.
Yeah,
that this is the inside page of that dark brown book.
Perfect. Okay, so like a notepad that they would give out.
Yeah, but that was just Patterson's way of promoting.
Promo.
Yep.
Good. Good.
And these are just books for identifying weeds. A lot of that going on. We had to when we're selling. And here's a book that it's a chart actually that would. It's a mixing chart. So for different grains, different chemicals, whatever, for different weeds, just something that made things simple. Mm-hmm.
There, I'll do the front of it too.
This one's put out by UGG. Every company had their own thing, mm-hmm. but this is one of theirs.
All right, this one's a weed identification. Oops, I got a glare. What do I have to do here to turn it? A weed identification kit. Compliments of May and Baker.
Yeah, that was a chemical company that made Buctrolam for one thing, different things.
I keep getting I guess, I don't know why I get a glare on this. But
because of the shiny paper on it.
Yeah, I bet you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Safety and health guide, grain elevator employees.
Yeah, that was something that we were working with all the time, all grain companies, is the safety of the workers.
And who put that out?
Labor Canada.
Labor Canada, this one would be.
Oh, that's interesting. See what year?
That's just another notebook, and that's it.
1978.
Yeah.
Affiliated Inspection Bureau.
That's the people that insured the grain companies. Bonded, any bond that was, we all had to be bonded.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that did that. It's the Affiliated Inspection Bureau. And they still do. Now, every company didn't belong to that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Patterson did, but the pools didn't. They insured themselves. So they weren't involved in that. And there was also some other companies that I can't just remember now, but
so, Mr. Timmerman?
Timmerman and Zimmerman. There were two there.
In here?
No, in that company, for that company, yes. I met
them. Hoping to have B interview Mr. Timmerman, who's now over 100.
Yes.
Yes.
I remember him when I first started with him. Oh, he was a stern man. Of course, with insurance company, you know, you get this tough.
He's a swimmer now, a master swimmer. Over 100, he wins all his categories. Probably the only one in the category, but still, the fact you can swim at over 100.
Yeah.
So how would somebody be stern?
Well, I mean, you know, you've met different people that, you know, there wasn't a smile on their face, and when they met, and everything was to the T, to the letter. You know, you just followed the, and if he come to inspect, don't think I ever had him at the elevator. He was in the office at the time when I, but. You know, everything had to be just so. There was no leeway. There was no give or take. But that's just the kind of person.
So what would they look for? What were some of the things that they were concerned about?
A lot of too much dust accumulation for explosion. And make sure that the greasing was done. You know, your bearings were all greased. And the dust globes on your electrical lighting and all that was in place. And no smoking.
Mm-hmm.
No smoking. And see, so many after so many demerits, well, you know, you could lose your job. And so that's one thing that they would do. They come in on a regular basis. They come, you know, 3-4 times a year. And
every elevator
that was insured through them, not the pools. So, Mr. Timmerman, he was at the head in the office at that time. I never hit him. I don't think I had him out in the country.
Would they come unannounced?
Yeah. You come. Same with the wheat board inspector. They wouldn't know that they're coming. Yeah, they come unannounced, which was okay. That was, you know, kept you on your toes. Mm-hmm. Kept things. And if you did things right, you'd have none to worry about. Mm-hmm. So that's what
good
they.
Stuff.
That's our collection.
Well, there's a few photos to look.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to. You just look through them if you care to, and I'll. I'm gonna.
Mm-hmm. These are good pictures.
Yeah, there's some good pictures there.
That's fabulous.
But there'll be more in that.
And then there's this. Yeah. I dropped my tape measure.
Okay, now we are looking at a scrapbook. Love scrapbooks. Let me move.
Pardon? Let's move these other ones out of here. This is kind of.
Okay, yeah, why don't we move what we've finished with?
Pictures over. These pictures there. And. Some of these I wouldn't be able to label because I have no idea what
they're. Look at this. Are these the ones that you took the pictures of?
No, I never did that. I don't know. They come with the package that I got from Blake. Now, that's an old. That's a promotion. Look at all the little. The company advertising their thing. That was quite a thing there. I kind of amused at that one.
I'm going to put these all in this bag.
Oh, yes, this is moving too. Moving across the field.
That's how most of them were moved years ago, as they waited till frost and then they could. Because the roads weren't heavy, built well enough to withstand that kind of weight. So they would wait till the fields would froze, good and froze, and then they move them across the field. I've seen them move them down the railroad track at one point. Yeah, but we're only within the town. This is when we started at Kerryville when I first started years and years ago. Yes,
my mother was a Cooper.
Okay, yeah. And Harold Cooper, the guy that.
My father's name is Harold.
Is that me?
No, it's Harold Britton. And
He was quite a. He was our dray man. He moved all of my box cars for me and so on. So anyway,
he was your what?
We called him the dray man.
Okay, then that.
That meant that he was the guy that met the train every day or whenever it came, and whatever freight there was, he would take it to the distributor on this little wagon, and. If somebody needed coal, then he would go.
And this is Kerryville.
That's Kerryville.
It's ever a pretty little town.
It is really. It's really a nice town. And that was after we built the new one. It's taken from on top of my new elevator.
Mm-hmm.
This elevator is gone now. And this one is closed up. And the other one is still. Mm. It's that's the place I boarded. But anyway, Carol was teaching, and I don't know whether this happened when she did or not, but. Anyway, the kids, they always come for tours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through the elevator. Well, anyway, thank you letters from.
Oh, that
was my class.
Yeah, that was your class, I guess.
Oh, nice.
So anyway, they, some different history we had to write over the years for the book. Different books, different. But anyway, there's. This happened. This may be hard for you to see.
Oh, this is interesting.
No, I can see. Thank you.
But that's there for they. That was on. End of July when the quotas end of the crop year, and they give us the last quota, and everybody wanted to get their grain in, so they hadn't hauled for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so
they also
didn't matter whose customer you were, as you can see, they're just scattered all over whichever way they faced into an elevator. They so, and then we broke the rules a little bit that day. We took the grain in. We started taking grain in about 10 o'clock, and we didn't get the quota. Official opening of the quota until the next morning. So we broke the rules a little bit, but we knew it was coming. In those days, we could request it, and then if we had enough room in town, then we could get it. But there was the old station. They don't see any more today either, so have all the dealings that had to be done through there with the cars and whatever. But anyhow, we had parades there too. It took that old truck to different parades. It's not mine, but a friend of mine. Here the train missed the track one day. There was a lot of snow and ice on the track, and backed in before he took what he should have done. He should have come in with the engine first, and he didn't. He backed it right into my elevator.
So I'm sure you weren't impressed.
Had a good laugh over it. But the thing was that this was the corner bin was full of rye, and when everything was cut and dried, we never lost a bit of, not even a shovelful hardly, because what happened when they smashed it in there, they broke right through into the bin, but they sealed it off. So what I did is I drained all the grain out of it, so that when they pulled the car away, everything was okay. So we never lost any. Well, there was a lot of laughs over that thing. But the people that did it, they weren't laughing. But here's where we were. We sold a lot of chemical, a lot of fertilizer stuff, and there were a bunch of trucks unloading. And it's kind of...
Now, just to let you know, we're probably coming near the end of our tape, but that's fine.
Okay.
Because...
I don't know whether it's much to describe or to commentate on here, but... Oh, just pictures of a plant there, and we had another guy do some applying for us. But here's the train again. He's
another view.
Wedged in there. Yeah.
CP thinks we have drive-in service.
But we had the chemical companies. They would always, promote their product once a year. They'd come. Different ones would have supper meetings and whatever. Always a theme. This year they had all dressed up in the Western gear, and just for a bit of fun, you know. So that was kind of fun. And there's the turning over. That's when I left Kerryvale. This gentleman here took over.
Hmm. And his name was?
John Peterson. Huh. And we're just kind of turning over the keys there. And this mm-hmm. The deal was in the paper. And our going away party here that the town had for us. Kind of.
How long had you been here?
23 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Here's an opening of Orkney, Saskatchewan. I don't know whether you heard of that one or not, but that's up near Alberta border, right up in the southwest corner of Saskatchewan. And they Patterson built one there, and that was in 1976. And that's for the opening. They had a team of horses bring a load of grain into it. Mm. So. And the different write-ups about it. And this is the elevator that they built in Kerryvale for us. And this is the gentleman that gave me all the stuff here.
Okay.
That's, that was in 1977.
Hmm. Your family.
That's the family, yeah. Yeah. That was the same one too. We had a platform, a band playing. We had at that one we started doing all the different. We had the team of wagon, team of horses, and then we had this one here, 1925, and 19. I'm not sure that was 35. I'm sure.
So showing all the different modes of transportation for bringing the wheat in.
Exactly.
And the grains in.
And right, all the different, every 10 years.
That's a great set of pictures there.
Yeah. That is.
And then we had the present day at that time was a semi.
Yeah.
Semis were just starting to come in. This truck and this one here, they were big trucks in those days. Man, they were big.
So those trucks, would there be just collectors that, and truck buffs that would keep them?
You mean these here?
Yeah.
Yeah, this one here and this one here. They're, this guy here, of course, he shows horses all the time, but. Uh-huh. These two, they were, people that restored them.
Mm-hmm. So how did you track them down?
Oh, we're friends of ours.
Oh, okay.
Small town.
There was
all these trucks were on hand.
Yeah, this one here, that was a pretty good truck in those days too. It was old. It was old. That was 48, in 1940. Yeah, that was kind of a. So we started it there. We kind of did it in different openings after that. So. And that's, this is Donald Patterson. That's the one that was in Winnipeg. He worked out of there.
Robert's uncle.
Yeah, Robert's uncle. And this is Robert's dad. Huh. Here, that's John. So that was the opening of the Kerryvale one. That one is Killarney. So they started with the, and they, and this guy here, well, that's Donald Patterson there again. And this fella here, that's Barry Woods. That's the guy that I said lived in, I think it's Comox, I think now. I think that's where he mm-hmm. went. And that's this fella here, I used to, with the driving the team, I used to work for him years ago in Killarney. And this is Mr. George Woods. He used to work for Patterson in Minto. Quite a family for working for Patterson. But this guy's quite a bit older. He's not as old as he looked.
No.
But he had this the donkey. That's the broad. That's how they would deliver grain years. First years ago, eh? So he had a donkey. So they walked in, and then of course the team of horses, and this truck again, and
I find it fascinating how it became a whole community event. That it just wasn't just a ribbon cutting.
Oh no,
they don't know
no,
what
no.
to do
that's
nowadays.
A celebration.
This is a whole celebration.
Oh yeah, this is a celebration. So that was this one was a year after Carrieville one. They built this elevator year after we did mine, so. And that one there, I guess that's probably Elm Creek. No, Colross. Colross. Colross.
They don't have to be right there.
And they, it's kind of hard to make it out, but there's a bunch of group of people gathering there.
That district.
Yeah, that was, yeah, they did the same thing, so that would be. Where is this? Must be here somewhere.
Blake.
Yeah, that's Blake.
Blake Masterson.
Blake's the MC. Opening ceremony.
Is there a place called Falkett?
That's Jack Falkett.
Oh,
He's retired now too. He was the manager of that elevator at that time. And that's still all Killarney.
Okay.
And they had entertainment there. And this is the truck that I took around for different ones, yeah. And and there's the guy walking up with his donkey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they did the same thing as what we did. They did all the different years of trucks. So.
Neat idea.
And there's the, but they had a draw for different things, and they had a one. There was another Woods. Giving out different tickets, which was, of course, for something valuable. But and then
you put some people in jail. Remember, they had a little jail set up there.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's what it was. Then they had a grand opening for Holland. That's
we're down to our last 4 minutes.
Okay.
So there's nothing really any more that you want to really get on tape.
I think we're okay.
I think I pretty well covered all we have.
It's a gold mine, is what you have here.
So, and this one here is when I was already, then I was a regional manager when this was Holland to me. And this one was moved from, it was moved down the track. This was another elevator, remodeled, but they moved it down the track instead of.
So that is the moved one.
After it's been moved. And, but I don't know where it came, what company. Mm-hmm. It was another company, but anyway, that's the pictures of the opening of the duplicate. And this is the gentleman, like I said, that I took over from, that gave me the stuff. And I was the regional manager, he was the manager in Winnipeg at that time.
This is interesting, from a female point of view. The MLA for Gladstone was Mrs. Charlotte Olson, and the local Holland elevator agent, is that a female?
No, that's
all male.
That's Bev.
I got excited. I thought there was a female.
We did have. We had a female buyer in Yellowgrass, Saskatchewan.
That was Mr. Dome's elevator.
That's where he started. Yeah. That's where he grew up.
Is she still around? Would you say?
Oh well, I'm sure she's around somewhere, but she's not with the company mm-hmm. anymore. She's long gone. Yeah, she did it there. The guys in the office thought I was crazy when I put her there. So. Mm. But it turned out okay.
Did she manage?
Yeah,
like, I mean,
she managed. She was
tough.
She was,
sometimes they can make life a little.
No, they were. She did okay. Yeah. And this is Donald Patterson, Robert's brother. You know all them, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I've never met Alexander, but I've met Don. And
yeah, he has a picture here somewhere, too, I think. Well, he will be in here somewhere. But, yeah, it's some different pictures from, and you see the railroad, they would donate a picture for the office, every opening that we had, they would give a donation to the picture that.
So when an elevator was closed down, what happened to all its stuff? Pictures, files, and so on? Just tossed?
Moved into anything that was of value was moved into the office, and anything else destroyed, so that there'd be no record of anything, you know, just to get rid of records. Mm-hmm.
Moved into the main office?
Yeah. And that's, again, still the Holland. It's Carol's helping out us that day, and this is the manager's wife. They're dishing out the cake. Tony Temple completes 25 years. This fella here, he was in Carnduff, Saskatchewan, is where he bought grain, and this is the regional manager there at that time. And here they got it kind of a misprint. That's why this picture's in here.
Oh, okay.
They had me getting the thing instead. No, they had me presenting it instead of this fella here.
That doesn't look like you.
No. And this one here is when at Elm Creek, this is now Colross. You know, when you drive by, I don't know, maybe you go by on number 2 highway.
Yes.
And that's, David, this one was moved. You see, it's Elm Creek. This one was moved from Elm Creek.
Oh, okay.
When it closed down, they moved it and made it into, this is just an annex, so they made that into a permanent elevator. And this is the fella here who's getting his
And we're now down to our final minute.
Oh, okay.
And this is Andy Watson getting his 25 years of service. And here are some of the guys that, when I was the regional manager, I took pictures of as they got their awards for long term. And here we were at I'm going to tell you about that, our son winning the, being able to distinguish the, this is the day, this is Barry Woods, that's the guy Farmers Avoid Persecution, that was quite a, prosecution, that was quite a thing, so, but, it's, we've got
to leave.